You're due for your biannual cleaning, something you usually forget and would rather not remember. But you just got a reminder from the Gentle Dentist in Worthington. Call
6141 3311. Welcome to another sparkling edition of The Thought Police with me, Mike Graham, and him, Kevin O'Sullivan. We're both on Talk Radio these days, but we do The Thought Police as a sort of an added bonus for everybody, really.
We're too generous to everyone, I think.
We really are. You know, people seem to quite like it, apart from a few recalcitrant types.
Well, the people who don't like it are the people who make it worthwhile.
Well, exactly right. I mean, I quite enjoy joshing with them. There's one bloke who keeps telling us how awful it is.
But the fascists.
Does it every week for some bizarre reason. Anyway, yeah. Let's talk about football, because it's great to see the football season's back in play. Premier League starts this weekend, right?
Yes.
However, we've had a nice little international break, which has done two things. It's allowed us to laugh at the people that organised Soccer Aid, or whatever it's called, because they didn't think that if they asked Yaya Toure to take part, that he would put out some kind of message on WhatsApp in which he would boast about how he could get 19 hookers into his hotel for anyone that wanted to help him out.
He didn't quite get the spirit of Soccer Aid.
and also then put out a pornographic picture of a woman in a bath. Despite the fact, apparently, that there were quite a lot of women on the WhatsApp group that he was sending it to. And he was immediately dropped by Soccer Aid. I mean, I do wonder sometimes when you get these organisations that deal with people like footballers. I mean, what do they expect footballers to be like? Do they expect them to be like choir boys?
Well, if they do, they've got another thing coming. And then, of course, we have our two young England heroes distinguishing themselves in Iceland with more soccer fun, Foden and
Greenwood. These are
Greenwood,
the guys who were found having smuggled in two girls, I think, into their hotel rooms. Two Icelandic girls. Mason Greenwood, 18. Phil Foden, 20. That's what footballers do, isn't it? But apparently they broke the local COVID restrictions and got fined by the Icelandic police.
And, of course, the manager once again had to swing the axe and act all tough.
Right.
But it's about time he acted a bit tougher, because it's getting to be like an almost weekly embarrassment.
So there's Harry Maguire, which we talked about the other week, right? So now there's these two young guys who were called up, I think, for the first time to the senior squad. One of them plays for Manchester United, doesn't he?
Yeah. Man United, Man City, so they're the
pride of Manchester. Great stuff. And then Yaya Toure, who I think is probably now too old to play for Manchester City, but is still
on their books?
He might be, I don't know.
He probably is, for about $300,000 a year or something.
Probably, but this is the thing. I mean, I was talking to somebody the other day about this, that, you know, here's a guy who makes so much money. I mean, he was on something like $400,000 a week.
He's one of the highest paid
footballers in the world, you know. So for him to organise a sort of 20 hookers to come over for whatever it is that they cost. Say they cost, I don't know, $2,000 each or something. It's only 40,000 quid. It's not even a full day's pay, is it?
But don't these people have any kind of moral compass at all? I mean, even the two young guys in Iceland, okay, one's 18, one's 20. They've got a lot to learn in life. But you think they might have worked out that's not the way to behave when you're representing your country.
And when you're also under quite a bit of a media gaze, I would imagine. Because England, I mean, what we forget, right, because we're from here, if England goes to Iceland, that's quite a big deal for Iceland.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they make out that they want to win the game. There's sort of round-the-clock media coverage. You know, people are quite excited because these are people they watch from the Premier League every week.
Yeah.
You know, it's a big deal. And one of them, by the way, the 20-year-old, I think, has already got a long-term girlfriend and a son, age one.
Phil Foden. Southgate has obviously swung the axe, dropped them from the squad. Both of their clubs, to their credit, have denounced their behaviour.
Right.
So they're properly in the doghouse. But it does make you wonder why people like Gareth Southgate, and indeed Manchester United and Man City, cannot get the message through to these younger players. Come on, behave yourself. Mm. Don't be so pathetic. But of course, they're part of a culture whereby they just think they rule the world. Mm. They've got so much money, more money than sense. Anytime they're in any trouble, their clubs bring in the top lawyers. They proceed with impunity, don't they? Yeah, they proceed through life often chaotically, but with impunity. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I used to know when my kids were a bit younger. One of them was quite interested in playing a bit of football, but it very quickly became clear that it was a very poisonous place to spend time, because there's a lot of very pushy parents who now see their kid playing in the Premier League as a kind of way out of all sorts of working situations, a way for your kid to make so much money that you never have to worry about money ever again. And the amount of pushing and kind of cajoling that goes on to get young kids from the age of about 7 or 8, basically, and sometimes younger, into clubs. I mean, because you can go and be signed up by Chelsea or Man United at the age of 7.
Yeah, yeah. So it's the new stage school. Yeah. In the old days, mums, pushy parents used to try and get their kids into show business so they became rich stars. Right. The new showbiz, if you like, is football. Get your kid into Man City or Man United, and who knows, fairly soon they might be on $300,000 a week. Happy days for the family.
Yeah,
it's a pernicious culture.
Big house in the Caribbean. Bob's your uncle. But unfortunately, the people that they have to kind of mix with, and I've always been slightly uneasy really about forcing kids to do anything, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
And you know, luckily one of my youngest actually kind of just lost interest in it after a while, but I remember taking him to this terrible kind of, you know, recreation ground in the middle of winter. You know, it was snowing, it was, you know, freezing cold, he had his football boots on, and you know, the guy was this rather gruff sort of.
Is it like trials for?
Yeah, it was a local football sort of club for boys.
Okay,
you know?
Okay.
And he was going along to see if they wanted him to be a part of it. Mm. I went to pick him up in the afternoon, and he had a little trophy that they'd given him, but he was freezing. His feet were covered in mud because you know, being Britain, it's not like you've got any kind of facilities at all to speak of. You've got a muddy field. He was covered in mud. You know, you can imagine the sort of the shouting and the barking that was being done. And people used to, I mean, when my older kids used to do a little bit of it, parents would get into fights on the touchline.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, that's Little League, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Little League punch-ups.
Just unbelievable.
Of the
and they take it so seriously, I know.
The trouble with all this is, you know, if you've got a brilliant kid who's amazing at football, then good luck to him or her. Hope they make it in the game.
Yeah.
But pushing your kid to become the next big Man United, Man City, England star on $300,000 a week means you are pushing your kid towards almost certain crashing disappointment.
Yeah.
You know, vanishingly
small. Because
by
far and away, the largest number of them don't make it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know? No, exactly.
And they still could play professional football, but for a much lower amount of money in a much lower league.
When I was a kid, I went through several trials for London clubs like Arsenal and West Ham and things. Yeah, I wasn't a bad little footballer. Uh-huh. But I remember when I turned up for the first set of trials and I watched the first set of kids playing, I thought, I don't think I'm going to make the grade. I wasn't really.
Well, it's like when you realise that you might be the best kid in the playground, but there's lots of other kids who are not bad. No. When we were at the Express, we used to play a lot of five-a-side football. Which was never a good idea because inevitably there was a bit of drink taken.
A few beers first.
Well, first of all, there was the sobering up from lunchtime scenario, right? And then we'd meet in a... We used to go to Spitalfields, right, where they had all these five-a-side pitches. But we entered one time into a competition that was going to be held at Highbury, right? So we went on to Highbury. It was great because, you know, it's always nice to go in behind the scenes.
Yeah.
They had this fantastic, five-a-side pitch, and it was a whole load of different media teams. And we ended up doing quite well, getting into like the semi-final. We played against Sky, and Sky had Sir Alex Ferguson's son working there at the time. This is the guy who I think later on became an agent.
Football agent, yeah.
Yeah, and the one that he boycotted the BBC over because they basically accused him of being, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, we had a guy in our team called Bob McKenzie, who was a rather sort of stocky Scotsman who kind of played right back in five-a-side. He never really moved. He just stood at right back, you know. Anyway, he got into a bit of a tussle.
Rock of the defence, literally.
Yeah, he got into a bit of a tussle with this guy, Ferguson. And they both got up and he just went smack. He smacked him straight in the mouth, knocked him out, got sent off. I'm going, what are you doing? Yeah, he's like, I'm not having that. Fuck off. That fucking, you know, he swore at me. Yeah. I'm like, right. That was brilliant. Absolutely hilarious.
I played for the Sunday Mirror once, the Sunday Mirror team. Against, it might have been the Express actually, and I was sort of nippy little forward, and I had the honour to be sent off after 30 seconds.
Well done. That's
30
quite
seconds
an achievement.
I was sent off.
We played an Express and Daily Star team where there was a competition where Littlewoods used to be the sponsors of the FA Cup. And they we played a game at the old Wembley. We played a tournament at the old Wembley. There's actually a video of it, which I have on VHS, which is punctuated most famously by me standing on the sidelines smoking shortly before one of the games. But we ended up getting to the final somehow. I think we won everything on penalties because we know nobody actually ever scored a goal. We got to the final and it was against the Sun. And we knew things were going to be bad when the referee called everybody into the centre circle and said, if anybody's wearing any jewellery, please remove it now. Everyone from the Sun went off because they were all ringers, right? They were all like guys that they brought in from Leighton Orient, the various West Ham boys, you know.
Every time you play a newspaper, they're
using... what do you do at the Sun, eh? I'm a messenger.
I appear in the sports pages.
I'm a messenger. But we actually won, right? Des Kelly, I think, scored the goal. He was playing for us. And so we got to walk up the steps. And it was quite good fun.
Yeah, good fun.
We all used to play a bit of football in the day. But I don't... You don't get the sense that people do much of that anymore, do you?
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, sports are not...
I mean, everyone's cycling everywhere.
Sports are not encouraged at school anymore, are they?
Not really. I mean, my kids do PE, but there's no sort of football team to speak of from the school, school has.
Because they don't really like competition anymore, do they?
No, they really don't.
So when I was at school, and I'm sure when you were at school, we had drummed into us that it was great to win and it was shit to lose.
Right.
And I still feel that about everything. And I think it was a good thing to be taught. Now they think it's a bad thing to teach kids, which is stupid.
Although, I mean, it seems to still produce reasonably good footballers because we still do produce some reasonably good footballers in this country.
Yeah. And then they go to Iceland and piss around with models and disgrace themselves.
Yes, right. Well, I mean, as I say, I'd be disappointed if they didn't do that.
I've got to say, this is the real disgrace of England in Iceland, was the performance of England.
Do you know,
against,
I didn't see the game.
Absolutely pathetic.
They won, though, right? 1-0.
They got a penalty in the last minute.
But this is the problem with Gareth Southgate, right? Gareth Southgate came in and everybody went, oh, it's a breath of fresh air.
Marvellous.
Isn't he great?
What
fantastic.
A guy.
Isn't he great the way they're playing? And it's now just back to
the same
old
show.
It
was square ball, keepy-bally. Right. Hopeless, absolutely. Very lucky with the last-minute penalty.
Presumably Harry Maguire wasn't playing, was he?
Harry's... I'm not sure. I think
it's persona non grata.
I think he's not supposed to be fit, and also.
Well, I'm not
non-grata.
Surprised after all that champagne and lobster.
He's been drinking too much.
Too many lobsters.
Anyway,
by the way, I see Mykonos is now on the banned list, isn't it? It's now on the quarantine list.
Yeah, they pulled in a load of Greek islands last night.
Yeah.
Talking of film stars and big names, I see that the government has recruited Jean-Claude Van Damme to do medical announcements.
That's great, isn't it?
And he's one of our many deputy chief medical officers.
Jean-Claude. Yeah.
Jean-Claude Van Damme. What's his real name?
Jonathan Van Tam. I actually used to quite like him when he did the briefings, because the briefings, he seemed to be slightly less kind of stuck up than old, what's his name, the chief medical officer, Whitty.
Whitty.
Because Whitty always seemed a bit aloof to me, whereas Jonathan Van Tam seemed to be a bit more, had a bit more of the common touch.
Yeah.
But his latest a pronouncement is all doom and gloom, isn't it?
Well, you know, what I think is getting very curious is the way that not so long ago they told us every day the death count,
right,
particularly when 1,000 people a day were dying at the beginning of
the
lockdown.
They're not doing that anymore, are
they? Now they say, cases are rising. people between the age of 17 to 21 are particularly affected. This is very worrying. 3,000 new cases today. They don't mention that there are only 700 people in hospital, and in fact, hospital admissions are going down. And they don't, most importantly, while we get these graphs and why we should be scared and old Jean-Claude Van Damme coming up, saying, oh, it's terrible, here comes the second wave. What they don't mention was the death toll that day was two. Two.
I mean,
two. We are now, it seems to me, they are twisting these statistics to bombard us with a kind of propaganda, definitely to keep us scared.
But then they're wondering why people aren't going back to work and going back to offices. And,
because I mean, they're keeping us scared.
You know, I got on the train yesterday for the first time in a while, and it was a bit busier, I would say, when I got on the train. But I got on the platform at Canada Water. There was not one soul. I took a picture and put it out. Not one person on the platform. Yeah. This was at 6:15, normally rush hour, right?
Yeah.
And everyone on the train was wearing a mask. But then I went out for dinner, got on another train at about 11:15. On that train, nobody was wearing a mask. presumably because they were all out
having had a few beers, and,
beers and they'd either forgotten or they just couldn't be bothered.
Yeah, after a few beers, you don't care
anymore.
Do you
know, I just don't get it.
But I think, is this really anything we should all be shit scared of anymore?
Because I don't think
they're
so.
Now saying, Matt Hancock's now saying, it's now young urban professionals are getting it.
Where are they supposed to be operating?
But he also said none of them will die from this. So what are we so scared of?
But also, all these urban young professionals are working from home, aren't they? I mean, none of them are actually in the office.
Well, they're trying to, again, I see this as a kind of weird, twisted propaganda. Mm. They're trying to link the alleged return to work, that people are going back to the office, with this vague notion of a second wave. Mm. Second wave isn't actually happening. I think there are 52 people on ventilators in the whole country. 67 million people in the country, folks.
And also, as I said to you last week, I think most of these 52 will have been on them for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not just being put on them.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not just like a new case.
Yeah, I mean, it's very... Jonathan Van Tam's declaration yesterday was very strange. It was very sort of chilling. But beware, be sure, this is going to get worse.
Harm your granny.
Yeah, yeah. Don't kill your
Piss
granny.
Off.
Don't kill your granny. My granny's already dead.
Yeah,
so fuck you.
Both my grannies are dead so it doesn't apply
them.
To me, obviously.
Yeah, fuck them.
You know,
it's very strange. They clearly want to keep us on alert. I don't mind that, I suppose. But don't in the same breath say you've got to all go back to work.
Right.
If you want to frighten the nation, they're going to stay in their own homes,
exactly,
aren't
right.
they?
But that's the problem, right? But it clearly seems to me that outside... I mean, maybe we're just being incredibly London-centric here, and I get a lot of this from people on social media, because obviously we live in London, so that's what we talk about. But, I mean, I go down to Sussex at the weekend, and certainly my local town is absolutely rammed with people.
Yeah.
Huge numbers of people out walking on the streets, going into the shops. I went to a shopping area, because I had to buy, because, of course, school starts this week, right? Mm-hmm. So I had the dreaded... his blazer doesn't fit. Better get a new one, right? Call up this place, which is the only, as far as we knew, we found another one, luckily, the only place where you can buy the school uniform. Mm. It's like a fucking monopoly.
It's always
right?
a racket, isn't
it's
it?
It's a complete racket. It's on one of these houses, you know, these industrial estates.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you kind of go, how did you get the fucking franchise for this then?
Yeah,
because everybody has to buy their school uniform from you.
Do you know anyone at the school by any chance?
Do you know what they had a sign up on their Facebook page basically saying, we will not, it was one of these things like you see on the Underground, we will not tolerate rudeness and abuse, because obviously they were telling everyone that they couldn't get the stuff ready in time, because guess what? They didn't know there was going to be a run on all the school uniforms in September, like there is every bloody year, you know. Mm. And they said, anyone who is rude or abusive to our staff will cancel the order.
By the way,
this is the world we're living in.
I've got an idea. You know, like Matt Hancock and Boris Johnson, they like bringing in all these new rules and laws every day. I've got one. That everybody, it will be from now on, be against the law to post pictures of your kids in their school uniform going
Facebook.
Back to school. I saw about 40,000.
I don't do that.
Jimmy's going back to school. So proud. Oh, fuck off.
Yeah, do shut up.
Yeah, shut up. No one cares about your kid except you.
Also, it's really not a great idea to put pictures of your own children on the internet, because you never know what they're going to be used for.
Yeah.
You really don't. I mean,
That's a good point, mate.
I mean, I now put pictures of my kids when they were younger because they're older now, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
But when they were under the age of, say, 12, I didn't put any pictures of them on the internet.
Yeah.
Absolutely no way. But neither did I ever identify them. I never even wanted anyone to know what their names were. You know?
I just feel, Phil, because the other week we discussed about this obsession with kids' exams results.
Oh, God.
Which happens every year, never mind the fiasco this year. Every year, massive obsession with, look who passed their A-levels, and now going back to school. This weird, weird kind of fixation we have with kids these days that didn't used to... exist. I think we should go back to they should be seen, not heard, and told to shut up and sit in the corner of the room.
Right. But this is the thing. Most parents now have no idea how to discipline their kids.
Yeah.
Most of them are spoiled rotten. They get what they want. They don't have to even ask for it. They just kind of, their parents just say, well, do you want anything? What would you like? There's nothing on the menu that he likes.
Yeah, and then
he can't fucking have anything.
And then what do we end up with? Fucking stupid little snowflakes who want safe spaces at universities.
Right.
It's ruining, bad parenting is ruining the country.
And I don't know, I mean, my kids are all quite spoiled, but they're not, in that way spoiled, in the sense that they don't, I mean, they,
your
they
kids
understand,
are really well behaved.
They understand that, you know, they're going to get shouted at if they do something wrong. Mm-hmm. And they understand that, you know, they're going to get punished if they do something wrong. And it's as simple as that.
They've heard you on the radio and they're not going to fuck with you.
Well, this is it. I mean, I say things to them and they kind of look at me. And, you know, sometimes their mother looks at me like, did you really say that? Because I say things like, I don't really give a shit. I said, I will go up to your room, I will take your fucking PlayStation and I'll throw it out the fucking window. It doesn't matter to me. It only costs 200 quid. I'll get another one later when you feel like you want to behave. But I'll certainly do it now. I'll put an axe through
it. Well, we need more dadding like that and more mumming like that, because we are churning out generations of useless kids who have no idea what the real world is. It feeds into what we were saying earlier. Schools discouraging competition, discouraging any sense of failure.
Yeah. And back to this whole business again, which is my pet bugbear at the moment of, you know, I had a guy on the phone today telling me that he works in IT, and he said, the thing is that we're all much more productive working from home. And I said, well, it's not very productive for people who are trying to make inquiries about things that they wanted to call a call centre about, because the call centre workers were working from home, mm-hmm. and they haven't got the answers to any of the questions. So how do you figure that's productive? Mm-hmm. And he did that thing where he went, oh, well, of course, there might be a few issues with that.
Yeah.
Like, a few issues, you say?
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
If you're a call centre, either you can help people or you can't. And if you can't help them, you might as well shut the call
exactly.
centre down and not bother. And he said, well, the thing is, he said, people can get things delivered now. I said, have you seen the roads lately? Do you wonder why the roads are so completely chock-a-block? Because everybody's ordering everything online. Nobody's going out. So every time you order, he's like, well, they could deliver it on a bike.
Yeah,
well, like, so what, you get a double bed delivered on a bike, do you?
When people are surveyed and they are asked, do you find it that you are much more efficient and work harder when you're working from home? They go...
Definitely.
They go, I'll tell you what, I don't have to go to work. It's easier. I do it in my dressing room.
Right.
Yes, I'm much more productive.
Oh, and guess
and
what?
And that's a lie, folks.
And guess what?
That's a lie.
Guess what? You'll have seen that story this week about the furlough frauds.
Yeah.
The people who have basically pretended to be on furlough.
Oh,
while
yeah.
Their
3.5 billion quid's
worth.
Their
companies have basically been telling them to carry on working. I mean, I suppose you can't really blame the government, but they should have seen that coming. You know, that some people are not particularly truthful if you're going to hand out free money. If you go, right, how many workers you've got? I've got 1,000. Mm. Okay, how many of them do you need to put on furlough? About 1,000.
Yeah.
And then you keep 500 of them working and take the money from the government.
This is there's a whole illusion about what's been going on during the coronavirus crisis. There's what you're talking about, the furlough. Everyone was straight on the straight and narrow about that. Were they hell? And also, of course, it's the obeying of lockdown rules and of coronavirus rules. Did you see the story at the weekend? Thousands and thousands of people who've come back from quarantined holiday areas haven't gone into quarantine.
No shit.
Big surprise.
Really?
Big surprise.
Well, of course they haven't. I mean, we've had people, countless people, telling us stories of how, you know, nobody's checking at the airport where they're coming from. Nobody's looking at the QR code that they're supposed to have downloaded. Nobody's looking at the online, you know, form that they filled out. They're just coming home and nobody's checking up on them when they're home.
Well, of course not. Of course not.
Because they can't. There's too many of them.
So the government and their propaganda machine is going to try to say, well, already is trying to say, that this is why we might have a second wave, because people are ignoring the rules. They're not going into quarantine. The fact is, you take a country like, well, Sweden is now in good shape, never had a lockdown. America,
I mean,
I've
never been one to buy that comparison, though, because they are very different
but
countries.
But America never really had a lockdown. They were a shambles in terms of what they did. They're coming out of it. The truth is, it's probable or possible that all the stuff our little government and their diktats didn't have much effect. We're just reaching some sort of herd immunity. It's kind of plateaued.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't feel like it's dangerous anymore.
It doesn't.
It really doesn't.
Why would we be, as a nation, absolutely petrified of a disease, a virus, that frankly now is basically killing no one?
Right.
It's the flu. You don't feel very well for a while, and then you feel better, right when you get the flu.
Right.
Why are we so petrified?
And if we can you imagine if we did what we're currently doing in terms of these figures of infections every single year with every single infectious disease, like, for example, the common cold, right? So every day there's a press briefing and the head of the health department comes out and says there's another 75,000 people infected today with the common cold.
What?
And none of them are going to die, but they're all going to not feel very well. Yeah. Then the noses are going to run.
Yeah, this is
and every day it would go up, and every day for a while it would rise and rise and rise and rise, and then it would disappear. Why would you do that?
I'll tell you what. I mean, well, that's what we do with coronavirus. That's exactly what we do.
Yeah.
Essentially now a non-fatal condition that makes people feel pretty bad for a couple of weeks.
Not everybody, though. Well, Quite a lot of people don't feel bad at all.
These 17 to 21-year-olds, most of them are asymptomatic, right. Don't even feel that they've got it. And yet this government is determined that we're terrified, that we're petrified, we're in a state of panic. And Boris, he's got to start doing a bit of forward planning, because that's not going to do him any good. What he needs to do is to get this nation back to work and get this economy back on the tracks, because this economy is going to crash so badly and it's going to fuck him sideways.
But, you know, when I watched him at Prime Minister's Questions last Wednesday, I thought he didn't look right at all. I mean, I don't mean necessarily physically, but mentally. He was very bad-tempered. He wasn't on his game. And maybe he was just out of practice because he hadn't done it for a while.
He was terrible, wasn't he? Like,
but it was awful. I mean, he really wasn't good. I mean, Starmer wasn't any better, mind you.
No, Starmer had a bad week.
It didn't make for a particularly interesting viewing.
Well, Boris's high point in PM Keys last week was furiously saying to Starmer, "Will he join me in congratulating children on their exam results?" What's Starmer going to say? No, I won't.
Yeah, right. Also, they're not actually their exam results. They're the ones you made up
for them.
I mean, I refuse to congratulate my son, right, who did really well in his GCSEs. Because I'm like, well, you didn't do really well, did you? You actually just got given a mark by somebody who thought that's what you might have got if you'd taken the bloody exam.
What did you say? Bollocks, kid. Don't let it go to your head. You're still thick. Dad of the year.
I mean, you know, absolutely. No, but you've got to keep them on their toes. You can't go... I mean, that's another thing people were doing on Facebook. You know, I almost jumped on a guy, but I thought if I do it, they'll just take it the wrong way, because sometimes people do with me, you know. Because he was like... Oh, I just want to say how proud we are of little, whatever his fucking name was, little Johnny. And I was going to say, well, hang on a minute, what's he done? He hasn't done anything.
He just stood there and somebody said, you passed.
Oh, look, he's got four A's and a B. No, he hasn't. Yeah. Somebody's just told him he's got four A's and a B. He didn't actually take an exam. Yeah. So why are you congratulating him, you fucking idiots?
Yeah, and now they're talking about delaying the exams next year. Yeah. Why?
Because they want to have more time off.
Tell the fucking kids to catch up.
Right.
Just tell them to catch up.
Yeah, just give them an exam
Just
give them an exam
every
week.
Get these kids used to the fact that's the way life is. That shit happens. You're going to have to work a bit harder to catch up. The exams are on the time.
Yeah, guess what? There's going to be days when you go to catch a train and it won't be there because they've cancelled it.
Yeah,
what are you going to do then? Burst into tears and roll yourself up into a fetal position. You know, also, somebody might burgle your house and steal everything you've got. Shit like that happens as well. And guess what? You might get in a car and it crashes into somebody else's car, and then you've got to fucking go to hospital, and then you've got to make an insurance claim, and sometime or other around, you know, when your parents get a bit older, they're going to die, and you're going to have to organise their funeral.
Exactly.
So get with the programme.
I'll tell you where shit happens a lot. Everywhere Michel Barnier goes.
That's true. He's exempt from quarantine because he's a diplomat, of course, so when he comes over with his gang, none of them have to do any quarantine. So how have we got a quarantine exactly?
Exactly. It's pathetic, isn't it? Well, how are we supposed to respect the quarantine rules when, these are VIPs. They don't have to do it.
Do you know the list of people who are exempt from quarantine is literally as long as your arm? It includes BBC engineers. It includes people who work for Eurostar and Eurotunnel. It includes all medical staff. Mm. It includes members of charities, NGOs. I mean, you know, literally the list is endless.
Well, it's like face masks, the exemptions from face masks. Anyone who thinks they might get a panic attack, how do you enforce that? You can't, can you?
Well, it's like that ridiculous instruction of the quarantine, you know, don't go out unless you absolutely really have to.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what does that mean? I really have to go out.
No, don't go out unless you want to.
Yeah, I really have to go out. I promise you.
Yeah. But to go back to Barnier, Barnier's stance is intransigent on the fishing debate, the new cod war, even though there are no cod left.
They've had them all out. They've
gone on holiday to Greece. They can't get back. They've been quarantined.
Yeah.
So what he's saying is that when we leave the EU, obviously our sovereign waters become our waters. Right. We are in charge of them. But we're not in charge of the fish in them.
Of course.
Well, actually, Michel,
Fish European?
Yeah, the point about the fishing is that people misconstrue what our stance is. They think we're going to take over our sovereign waters, which we will, 200 kilometres around the coast of Britain, and not allow French or Spanish trawlers or Scandinavian trawlers into our waters. That's not true.
Well, I'm assuming we're going to flog them to space.
We've always, before the EU existed, before the common market existed, we always let them in.
Right.
But we call the shots. They're our waters. You can come in on our terms.
And these are how many fish
you
can
get. So this is how many of you can come in. Right. There may be financial arrangements, but we call the shots.
Yeah.
If it's our sovereign waters, how can he logically say, oh, no, it stays as it is?
Right.
The EU's in charge of your
waters. Well, it's not, is it?
Is it bollocks?
But this is like the same argument they're having about Northern Ireland, where apparently, and I was talking to Richard Tice about this, he knows a fair bit about the EU, and I said, look, this idea that somehow we have to get an arrangement with Northern Ireland, which is approved by the EU, why? What's it got to do with them? Well, you know, they've got nothing to do with the United Kingdom anymore. We have left the European Union. It is not for them to tell us how to do business with Northern Ireland.
Yeah, this
Piss
is
off.
It's exactly what I had a fishing guy on my show last week, and he said that. I said, well, why can't we just take back our waters and start fishing them ourselves? If these Europeans want to fuck us around, we'll fish our own waters and feed ourselves.
Well, the trouble is we haven't got enough fishermen.
No, then he starts going, oh, well, you see, the thing is about the EU quotas. I said, well, we're leaving the EU. Fuck their quotas.
Right, exactly.
Fuck their
Here's
quotas.
Here's your new quota.
People do not.
Fuck all.
People do.
You know. See you
Jack
later.
Shit.
Yeah. Here's how many cod you can have. Bugger all.
Yeah.
Right.
But why can't people get it through their heads that when we leave the EU, EU quotas, EU
Don't
rules,
matter.
EU laws mean nothing to us?
I had a very confusing conversation with a caller this week who came, who claimed, slightly conspiratorially, that actually our fishing fleet is not British because it's somehow owned by loads of other foreign countries, which might be true. Because apparently there's something called quota swapping, whereby, you know, so basically the boat that comes out of, you know, Hull or Grimsby is actually owned by some company in Holland.
Yeah.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
And it doesn't bother me either. As long as they're British fishermen and as long as they're British registered boats, technically that's a British fisherman's boat, isn't it?
Yeah. And our fishermen, I mean, it's a small industry in this country.
Because it's been whittled down.
But it's very symbolic. It's important to us.
It is. But also we don't eat as much fish as they do in Europe anyway. So we would sell it all to them anyway, wouldn't we?
Well, yeah, we will continue to do that. Our langoustines are very prized in Spain.
Yes.
In fact, all over the world.
I once ate dinner in a place called the Three Chimneys, which is on the Isle of Skye. And the langoustine, I think they changed hands. They sold it, but it had a Michelin star. And it was one of these places in the middle of nowhere. And the langoustine came from the loch, which was literally a stone's throw from the restaurant.
It was good.
Yeah, it was great. Really good.
Well, our fishermen have hated it every day of their lives since Ted Heath gave away our fishing rights half a century or so ago.
He's got quite a lot to answer
for,
Ted Heath.
Yeah, he really has. And they want us to take back control of our waters and to dictate what the Spanish, French and Scandinavian trawlers can do. Mm. And they will be thrilled for that. And that's the whole point of the fishing negotiations. It's to return power to our fishermen, which seems to me to be what leaving Europe is all about.
Well, exactly. Self-determination.
Yeah.
And people who are on the Remain side of the argument, of course, have all started piping up again. It's all going to be a disaster. Yeah. You wait and see. You know, you see what's going to happen. It's going to be a nightmare. And they have no more idea of how much of a nightmare it's going to be than they did 2 years ago when they started saying it, you know. And they just repeat the same old cobblers. And Barnier knows that if they piss us around too much and we leave with a bad sort of odour, then that's not going to be helpful to them, because other countries will look at that and go, this is how they treat you, we're out as well.
Well, what I think is that Boris and still wants to get a deal.
I think so. I guess to get a deal if you can get one which works.
Yeah, but if you look at the Irish situation, he's gone back and looked at what our negotiators agreed to and thought, actually, this is a bit shit.
Mm.
So he's demanding changes to that. So he's getting very, very tough with Barnier. Mm. He's not going to move on the fishing. Barnier looks like a worried man. Mm. And Boris is definitely, in my mind, proceeding like a guy, I heard Richard Tice say to you, on the basis that no deal is better than a bad deal.
And he'll be getting a lot of pressure from Brussels and from Strasbourg by people saying to him, you've got to sort this out. Mm-hmm. You've got to come back with something.
Barnier looks worried to me. Worried to me.
Well, also, you know you're in a good place when The Guardian makes its front page headline, apparently the EU doesn't trust us. No. Oh, good. Well, good. I'm pleased about that.
Yeah, well, that's feelings
that's,
mutual.
That's not bad news, mate. That's good news.
That's feelings mutual. It's Boris is saying 5 weeks to do the deal or not to do the deal.
Right.
These are going to be interesting times.
I think they are. But at least we get to talk about something other than bloody COVID-19. It's
great to get back to Brexit, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, when I started looking at it all again this morning to read all the stuff in the papers, I was just going, Christ, I mean, because there were times last year when you literally thought we'd be doing this forever.
Yeah.
I mean, I was in that tent of common sense, as we used to call it. And you get these people trudging in and out, you know. Well, you know, the thing is, we can't vote for this because it's not a real deal. And I had that ridiculous conversation with Lisa Nandy, who pretended that there'd never been a deal and said that, you know, it wasn't a deal. And it's one of my favourite comments of the year, actually, because at one point she just turned to me and said, you're just being difficult now.
I remember that.
To which the mother of my children said she should try living with you.
Lisa Nandy has always confused me because everyone hails her as the great, brilliant hope of female
politics.
Well, even
the Labour Party didn't think she was up to much. I mean, I wish in a way I wish she'd been made the leader because she might have been a bit more charismatic than old robot.
She's about as cogent and consistent as Diane Abbott and Dawn Butler.
She's a sort of millionaire version of Dawn Butler and Diane Abbott put together, isn't she?
Yeah, what about those two, like Extinction Rebellion? Great.
Well done. Oh, shit, I better get rid of that.
Actually, if I read the law correctly, both of them said that this was within the law. What they did was restrain trade illegally.
Right.
So the newspaper's trying to get their papers to just distribute them out. If you get in the way of someone's legal pursuit of their trade, that's against the law. Well, so I don't think their demonstration was legal.
Also, if it wasn't against the law, why did they get fined?
Yeah.
Because they fined a bunch of them, haven't they?
Yeah, yeah,
which
exactly.
Which is exactly as it should be.
So it wasn't a legal demonstration.
No.
That's a lie.
No,
Extinction Rebellion, they're just liars.
There's no
climate change emergency. There's climate change. There's global warming. It is not
an emergency.
Well, I
watched Dan Wooden yesterday trying to interview some tosser from Extinction Rebellion and asking him, why did you have to take out these two claims from your documentary with Keira Knightley, which you told me about?
Yeah.
And he couldn't answer the questions.
Yeah.
Because he wouldn't answer the questions, they got them wrong, that they deliberately lied.
It's faux science. They make this stuff up. What they had to take out was the claim that hundreds of thousands of people all over the world have died in the past year from air pollution.
Yeah.
It's absolutely unsubstantial.
Of course it is.
Unsubstantiated.
Well, but these are the UN's figures. The UN is some kind of great body of science. It's not.
You cannot prove that that's true. It's literally that thing about lies, damn lies, and statistics. They're just plucking these figures out of the air to put us into a state of panic. That film was called Why We Should Panic.
Yeah.
There's no reason to panic,
don't
folks.
Don't panic.
Those people don't give a fuck about climate change. They just want to smash capitalism.
Exactly.
It's
the new black, isn't it? Basically find some statistics, make an argument around them, and go, look, see?
Yeah.
I told you.
Yeah, they're a quasi-religious doom cult inaccuracies.
I'll tell you what they are as well, a bit like Black Lives Matter. They're very good at fundraising. They have got a lot
of
money.
Because
all these nutcase lefties who've got loads of money, like Sir Mark Rylance, loves to go out and sort of, it's not even his real name, by the way. So he talks about, let's be honest about the climate.
What's his real name then? Bob Smith or
something like that, yeah. He changed his name, right?
To sound more actor.
To sound more actor. He claims he changed it because somebody else already was in Equity with the same name, that old chestnut. But somehow
his real name's
got
Robin Reliance.
Yeah, but he's somehow got this name which sort of suggests a bit of aristocracy.
Rylance.
Mark Rylance, because it makes me sound very literate. He also, by the way, had fellatio performed on him in reality for a film. Because, of course, he can't act getting a blowjob. He has to actually get one.
No.
So this is a guy who's a bit fucking weird, as far as I'm concerned. You know?
Well, it's one way to make acting work for you,
well,
isn't
exactly
it?
Right. I mean, you know, there are easier ways, but there we are. Anyway, we seem to have come to the end of yet another sparkling edition of The Thought Police. So I guess we'll have to wait another week to see what the numpties that run this government are actually doing.
It'll be downhill all the way.
It'll be, maybe we'll have to be in separate chambers next week, because we'll have had another lockdown. We'll have to sit in the same fucking room.
We're in our hazmat suits.
Exactly right. We'll see you next week.
I had a fishing guy on my show last week, and he said that, I said, well, why can't we just take back our waters and start fishing them ourselves? If these Europeans want to fuck us around, we'll fish our own waters and feed ourselves.
Well, the trouble is we haven't got enough fishermen.
He said, no, then he starts going, oh, well, you see, the thing is about the EU quotas. I said, well, we're leaving the EU. Fuck their quotas.
Right, exactly.
Fuck their
Here's
quotas.
Here's your new quota.
People do not.
Fuck all.
People do.
You know, see you
Jack
later.
Shit.
Yeah, here's how many cod you can have. Yeah, bugger all.
Yeah.
Right? Well, we used to go to Spitalfields, right, where they had all these farmside pitches. But we entered one time into a competition that was going to be held at Highbury, right? So we went on at Highbury. It's great because, you know, it's always nice to go in behind the scenes.
Yeah.
They had this fantastic, you know, farmside pitch, and it was a whole load of different media teams. And we ended up doing quite well, getting into like the semi-final. We played against Sky, and Sky had Sir Alex Ferguson's son working there at the time. This is the guy who I think later on became an agent.
Football agent, yeah.
Yeah, and the one that he boycotted the BBC over because they basically accused him of being. Anyway, we had a guy in our team called Bob McKenzie, who was a rather sort of stocky Scotsman who kind of played right back in five-a-side. He never really moved. He just stood at right back, you know. Anyway, he got into a bit of a tussle.
Rock of the defence, literally.
Yeah, he got into a bit of a tussle with this guy, Ferguson. And they both got up and he just went smack. He smacked him straight in the mouth, knocked him out, got sent off. I'm going, what are you doing? Yeah, he's like, I'm not having that. Fuck up. They're fucking, you know, he swore at me. I will go up to your room, I will take your fucking PlayStation and I'll throw it out the fucking window. It doesn't matter to me.